Good morning. Welcome to the Mr. Relevant Podcast. Monday, December 14th. I'm your host, Jamie Mottram. Here to talk about Washington's 23-15 win in Arizona against San Francisco. It's the Chase Young beast to my Chase Young bust, Matt Terrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. The whole Chase Young bust narrative, we're going to have to really, talk about that.
Okay. Let's start.
Okay.
I got called out on Twitter yesterday. Like, I just got randomly, I wasn't even in the context of like anything I had put out, but somebody tweeted at me being like, how's that Chase Young bust thing going for you?
Well, you know, to be fair, you were the one who was somewhat on that train. Not a lot, but somewhat.
Imagine how much shit Thomas Boswell must be getting.
Oh my God. Like, I can't even imagine it. But like, what was, how, I don't know. It was staggering. But would you say his game, Chase Young's game yesterday, was the best you've ever seen from a Redskins rookie?
I mean, it's hard to say because it was like whatever the best is, it was up there because it's hard to beat whatever yesterday. You know, like a Madden, like the best players in Madden are like a 99 rating. Like that was a 99 game.
Which is when we were talking about the pre-draft things. That's what we were saying. I mean, that's what everybody was saying, is he has to be a 99 in Madden to be worth the pick. And it seems like maybe he was.
Okay, so it was phenomenal. I mean, he made so many plays, but obviously the signature play was the scoop and score, where he motored like 50 yards down the sideline with the ball like fully extended out in his hand. It almost looked like a tennis ball. He was cooking. Like, I think his mom said he was trucking or something, like keep on trucking. There was like receivers that were like in pursuit, not gaining ground.
Yeah. And that was the weird thing, was as he's running, you're sitting there going, oh wow. Like, you know, if he has enough speed, he can make it. And then somewhere, you know, 10, 15 yards into it, I was like, he's really fast. He really might have enough speed to make this. But the ball thing, somebody has to talk to him about that, right? I mean, I hate to nitpick, but that could have gone terrible.
Well, that's why I think he's a bust. That's why I think he's a bust, is the ball security or lack thereof.
I think that's fair. And if you look back at his spider stat thing from the combine, I'm pretty sure they didn't even talk about ball security there. So we should have known that was coming. Typical Washington football team luck. What a disaster.
I mean, it's awesome to see. I mean, he was the star of the game yesterday, no doubt. The defense scored 2 touchdowns. They only allowed 2 touchdowns. So all the offense had to do was kick 3 field goals. They only had to kick 1 field goal to win it. Thank God, because the offense was terrible. We'll get to all that. Chase Young is a star. He looks like he's in line for postseason hardware, you know, rookie of the year, Pro Bowl, maybe, you know, whatever. You're going to see his name in headlines receiving awards, most likely. But the bus thing is really bothering me. I feel like there's massive revisionist history going on, and most of it coming from inside the Washington bubble with football team Kool-Aid drinkers.
Talk me through this. Explain what you mean.
Okay. So I'm just like a little pawn in this because I read the column and I thought it was good. But Boswell wrote an evidence-based column that pointed out that Chase Young had gone 6 games with 1 sack, and in the first 10 games of the season was not that much of a difference-making player. Which is, you know, concerning when you draft a defensive lineman, pass rusher, number two overall, it's not that you're drafting the potential of a multi-time All-Pro, borderline Hall of Famer. That's what you're expecting. The evidence is that is the track record of like a dozen dudes. There's only been one ever who wasn't a total stud. And through 10 games, in the midst of a 6-game stretch, we had 2 quarterback hurries. Let alone sacks. 6 games for 40% of the season. The team was 2-7. He didn't even say that Chase Young's a bust. He just said, what we're seeing here is concerning. This is not what you draft when you draft a pass rusher number 2 overall. And I think the Washington Post did him a disservice because there were some like social posts that were like tweets about like, is Chase Young a bust? And now the revisionist history is like, people are calling Chase Young a bust. Bullshit. That's the biggest straw man argument I've ever heard. It was some people 10 games into his career pointing at the evidence and saying, well, this isn't great. And now he's flying high, and he looks like he's going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. The team's flying high, four wins in a row. And it's like, ha-ha, you people called him a bust. That whole thing is bullshit.
I don't know that I fully agree, because even if we grant that the word bust was not used in the column, and we grant that was beyond maybe the intention of the column, writing that column at that point, what was it, 8 games into Chase Young's career, it was a reach. And I mean, when you and I talked about it, like, what sort of highlighted this was you said something to the effect of, you know, he needs to have multiple multi-sack games or multiple Pro Bowl years or something. It's like, well, he hasn't even finished his first year yet. It was
right.
The column was prematurely written and also wrong.
I mean, you're in the middle of a 2-7 season. You're in the middle of, what are you going to write about? You're going to write about the number 2 overall pick who was drafted to, yes, go to multiple Pro Bowls, or he's a total failure.
But I mean, like, we hadn't even gotten to the start of Pro Bowl voting yet. It just seemed,
right.
Look, as somebody who has occasionally been responsible for, you know, writing stupid hot take columns about this team on a time-bound basis, and therefore having to commit myself to stupid, stupid takes, like, I get it. I totally do. But it was a foolish hill for Boz to get out on. There's plenty of other things about this team. Like, I mean, this team is easy.
No. Here's the thing. I'm wondering, did anybody read the column?
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole column was saying the dude got like 1 sack in 6 games. This is not what you expect out of a number 2 overall pick.
But when
you expect an all pro. That's all he was saying.
When he was picked, there were things beyond sacks that were listed as part of the, you know, hopeful package, you know, his effect on everybody else. What if you say
you expect what you're seeing over the past month?
Right.
Since the column was written. Yes.
Right. Well, I think
that's the expectation.
When you put it that way, I think we can both agree that Boswell is the real motivator of this season. And without him, I don't know where the team would be.
I just think it's so funny. Like, it's not about my receipts. Like, you could listen to our podcast and hear whatever. Nobody cares about that. But like, I think whenever anybody talks about like, haha, people were calling Chase Young a bust, I think what they're really talking about is one column that did not call him a bust.
That's a fair point. You're not wrong. But he seems pretty good.
Dude, he's awesome. He's a total star.
You mentioned,
like, him and Sweat together are so fun. This is like the most fun I've had watching the Washington defense in decades.
Ever. I can't think of a – because even the good defenses and great defenses of, you know, the Super Bowl teams, I guess you had Dexter Manley, you had Wilbur – there were always guys, but I don't remember ever feeling like an entire unit, like an entire section of the team was as strong as this defensive line. I mean, I'm sure if I don't know, David Elfin were here, he'd be Dave Butts and Dexter Manley and Charles Mann all over the same line.
Somebody get Rick Snyder on the phone.
Exactly. Well, Rick Snyder blocked me on Twitter like a decade ago. And I don't know. I have no idea what he's been saying for the past 10 years.
He's been saying Chase Young's a bust.
Well, let's get him. You mentioned defensive rookie of the year. Alex Smith, a lock for comeback player of the year. I think everybody agrees on that. Ron Rivera, possible coach of the year?
Wow, I didn't think about like the hardware, the trophy case. They might come from this 6-7 Washington football team.
It's a 6-7 team, which has therefore doubled last year's win total.
I mean, I think Smith and Rivera, it's like stuff. It's as much about off the field as on the field. So just the fact that Smith is able to get back on the field and have some success, it's almost like that alone makes him a lock for comeback player of the year. The fact that Washington, with Rivera coaching through cancer, you know, because, I mean, really, there's other stories out there, you know, like Cleveland with Stefanski. Cleveland hasn't had a winning season in like over a decade. They haven't been to the playoffs since like 2001. I think they're 9-3. You know, I mean, there's other stuff out there that I think there's other contenders, but certainly Rivera could win it.
I mean, I just think that in addition to the on-the-field coaching and the cancer treatment, there's also the culture change. And no team had a worse – Cleveland did not have a worse culture than Washington. They didn't. They just didn't.
I don't know how to argue. First of all, I don't know that anybody can have a worse culture than Washington, but also I think Cleveland's probably pretty bad.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. That's a fair point. But so then – So then what we need is we need Antonio Gibson to come back from this injury and hit like two touchdowns a game for the remainder of the season and then get offensive rookie of the year and just go for the clean sweep.
Dude, we need Gibson back, period.
How weird is it that at some point in the last 2 weeks, Antonio Gibson went from like nice story, unheralded, strong third round pick to like desperate necessity for this team?
Yeah, well, I mean, Smith and Haskins' play didn't help, but that offense was just inept.
Yeah, is it time now to finally talk about the Haskins part of this whole thing?
I don't know if it's the Smith part or the Haskins part. You know, I mean, by the way, remember the big stat that I was so fond of last week about like Alex Smith's win-loss record in Washington compared to the non-Alex Smith? Well, he got another win yesterday as a QB starter, despite going like 8-for-19 with a terrible pick and 60 yards and a bad half before limping to the locker room.
And further to our conversation about that, despite visibly playing terrible, the team was better with him in than with him out. It's even his terrible games somehow are more winnable terrible games than other quarterbacks.
Well, I certainly feel more comfortable with Alex Smith taking the air out of the ball than Dwayne Haskins. So Dwayne Haskins comes in, they were up 13-7, is that right, at the half? Is that what it was after the Chase Young score?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
So first drive, they get a field goal. Haskins led offense. They get a field goal. And that was it. I think that was it for like positive offensive stuff in the second half. The play that just killed me, because I feel like overall I'm pretty like Haskins apologist or like give Haskins a chance type of, you know, it's kind of my point of view. That near interception with like 3 minutes left in their own red zone on third down on what should have been an easy completion to McLaurin over the middle for a first down. It should have been an easy completion, clean pocket. He's streaking over the middle, very open, very badly needed first down to keep killing the clock and hold on to the 8-point lead. He airmails it over McLaurin. He airmails in like the worst spot on the field across the middle. And it was so close to being an interception, ruled interception on the field, was a trapped ball, overturned. That throw was so bad. I mean, like if my 10-year-old made that in flag football, I'd have a hard time not yelling at him. Like that's how bad that throw was. Crucial spot. It just kind of like wiped him out for me.
Yeah, it was not a good throw. Although I'm looking at the statistics and I did not realize that Dwayne Haskins was statistically superior to Alex Smith. So I rescind my previous point.
He was like 7-for-12.
Yes, but no interceptions.
No. Yeah, well, should have been an interception, but yeah. I didn't believe that throw. It just killed me. It was like they're sitting on first place all by themselves with 3 games left to go and swinging their playoff probability from like 40% to 70%+. All they got to do is like get a first down. That's it. It's right there. And instead, what should have been an interception in his own red zone. Man, that was just a bad, bad throw, a bad indicator.
Yeah, I was kind of astounded by how bad Dwayne Haskins looked. When we would talk about him earlier in the season, I felt like our talking point was sort of like, well, he's just kind of there. You know, he was not quite a net negative, but he just certainly wasn't a positive. But I thought he seemed like an actual detriment to the team yesterday. Now, you know, I'm sure he had no starter reps. He had no blah, 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 no practice, blah, blah, blah. But it was not great. Like if it came out today or tomorrow that, you know, Alex Smith is out and we're going to start Steven Montez or what's his name, Tyler Heinicke or whatever the guy's name is next week, I would not be surprised. Would you?
I would not be surprised. I don't know if I'd be angry. I definitely would be disappointed, you know, because it's just like this guy was a first round pick 18 months ago and already it's so untenable that you just go to anybody over him. I mean, they kind of did that already earlier this year going to Kyle Allen, but you know, it's just like another nail in the coffin. I will say there's two ways it could have gone when like the backup QB comes in, especially like a first round pick who's still kind of young and like not really proven one way or the other. There's two ways it could go. Like you'd expect with a lot of guys who come in, like Jalen Hurts coming in yesterday, even though he was the starter. you could see like a scenario where they score like three touchdowns and they run it up and the guy just like shows out, you know, like that happens sometimes when backups come in, that happens. It never felt like that was even a possibility. It always felt from the start of the second half all the way through it that they were just struggling to hold on, just hold on and not blow the lead.
That's an interesting point because I think I agree and I think you're correct, but I think that partially comes from the way Scott Turner called plays for Haskins from the moment Haskins got in. It was really clear that the game plan was let's try to help Dwayne and not let Dwayne ruin this for us. But there was no point where I felt like they were like, let's see if Dwayne can help us win this. And I think we know at a minimum that the coaching staff, presumably Scott Turner, I'm just speculating, but that'd be my guess, does not like or trust Dwayne Haskins, which is a problem now because he might be the quarterback.
Before we spin it forward, I just do have one like minor complaint, which is directed in the general vicinity of Steven Sims Jr.
Yes.
Two plays just really bothered me. One was the dropped pass on third down. I don't remember what the game situation was, but it was like, you know, they were up maybe a score in the fourth quarter. I'm not sure, but it was like a third and long, and they weren't converting third downs all day. I mean, they were like 3 for 15 or something on third down. But Haskins threw a pretty good ball, an acceptable ball, like 15 yards downfield, hit Sims right in the hands, and he dropped it. That was just such a killer drop when they're fighting for like every first down, and they just needed like another set of downs for him to drop that ball. And I mean, that really sucked. And it happens. But then the other Steven Sims thing is even later in the game, he's receiving a punt and he should have fair caught it at like, he was outside the 10, maybe closer to the 15, and he let it bounce. And the 49ers do like a circus play to down it at like the half yard line, maybe the half foot line. And it just put them in such a hole that it wasn't even about making first downs, which they, again, they really badly needed. It was about just like not getting a fucking safety. It just killed Steven Sims for a guy who has played such a minor role in the grand scheme of like their offense, really hurt them with those two plays.
Yeah. He hasn't looked good this whole season. He's been a disappointment. I feel like I need to also speaking of dumb takes, I was firmly convinced the Niners were going to win this game. I was convinced somehow that the vengeance seeking on behalf of Kyle Shanahan and Trent Williams and Jordan Reed would play a part, and it really clearly didn't. I could try to make the follow-up argument that this is somehow speaks well to the culture change in DC, that like, but really, I just think that I was wrong, and I missed that one, and that's okay.
Well, I mean, I think it was kind of a toss-up game going in. I don't even know what the line was, but I felt like it was kind of a 50-50 game. And two things happened. The Redskins, Washington scored two defensive touchdowns, which I think I heard a stat that hadn't happened since 1992.
For Washington, I think that's correct,
For Washington, yeah. also, they won on the road for the third straight week for the first time since 1982. I think it was another stat that I heard. I might have gotten that wrong, but three straight road wins. You don't have three straight road games all that frequently, but three straight road wins. So it's just an improbable kind of situation. But also, I don't think enough is being made of the fact that the 49ers' best offensive player at this point, Deebo Samuel, went down on the first play of the game.
Yep.
Like, they were out not only Kittle and Garoppolo, so their best offensive player, an all-pro offensive player, and, you know, their best quarterback. But then they also lost kind of like their version of Antonio Gibson unexpectedly on the first series. And so you're playing the almost like the zombie 49ers offense, you know. And Kyle Shanahan's a good coach, but he just didn't have a lot to work with.
Yeah, although, I mean, Kyle Shanahan's decision to have Nick Mullins throw the ball 45 times like, I know the secondary is probably, if you're scheming it up, the secondary is probably the weak spot for Washington, and you want to stay away from that defensive line. But Nick Mullins looked bad, And I question the decision here to just keep him chucking the ball. I mean, I guess they were within one score of tying the game in the end, but still.
I mean, it was a weird game. I mean, overall, I'm just thrilled. Like, the defense obviously looked great yesterday, despite how bad the 49ers offense may be. And for the season, I mean, they're now, I was kind of like, you know, I thought the numbers were a little funny. Like, I didn't feel like Washington had a top 10 defense just by looking at them. But the way they've played the last several weeks on this 4-game win streak, I think I heard a stat like last 4 weeks, they might have the number one defense in terms of points allowed and yards allowed. So, I mean, it's legit. And then you look at their record. Yeah, it's 6-7. You know, 6-7 is a game out of the wild card. It's not only first in the division, but it's a game out of the wild card. You look at their point differential, I think they're +5. They have the 7th best point differential in the NFC. That's good enough for the last wild card spot. All of which is to say, like, they're an average team when you look at the whole of it on a 4-game win streak. They're an average team that's a borderline playoff team. And just a few weeks ago, they were looked at, this division was looked at as like a total laughing stock. Yep. Like, haha, how funny that Washington would even, oh yeah, they might win the division, but it's total bullshit. It's like an insult that they'd be in the playoffs. I mean, if the division was better, they'd actually be still competing for the playoffs right now.
It's weird. They seem to be a good team. I mean, they seem to have gotten better over the course of the year. And I think that's what's so baffling to us as, you know, Washington fans or viewers. Anything is that just historically it feels like even when they've gone on these late season runs, it didn't feel like they had gotten better. It just felt like they'd gotten kind of lucky or the schedule had broken their way. But it just feels like they're a legitimate team right now. I mean, I don't know. Am I wrong?
Well, yeah. Up until 2 weeks ago, like we talk about, they're on a 4-game win streak and that sounds awesome and all that other stuff. But up until like last Monday, their only wins were in the division and Cincinnati. So that just, you know, that seems like, you know, pretty hollow. But then they beat Pittsburgh, who was undefeated at the time and is now, you know, 2-loss Pittsburgh team. It's not quite as, you know, marquee of a victory, but still very good win. And then the 49ers, like, who are an average team. They just beat Arizona, I think, last week, right? Didn't they beat somebody last week?
They beat somebody. I mean,
an average team. They were kind of in on the playoff fringe coming into this game. So yeah, I mean, they're fine. And you couple all this together, the fact that they're like pretty much an average team who just, by the way, has now doubled their win total year over year and exceeded their over under for wins on the season already, even if they don't make the playoffs, successful season right there, but they're actually likable. They don't have a racist name anymore. Yep. All the stuff about Rivera and Alex Smith, like, that matters. Like, as a fan, like, it matters that I can actually root for this team. And they have, like, a foundation for the future. Yeah, like, yeah. Sucks that there's no, like, quarterback on the roster that you can, you know, pencil in as the starter down the road. But, you know, the other pieces are coming together, especially the defensive line, which just looks like a foundation for at least a decent team for years to come.
Yeah, and just to clear up, the 49ers actually lost last week to Buffalo. They remember Josh Allen had that crazy game. But what we were both thinking of was the week before when they beat the Rams, who are
That's it. I can't keep track of all these things.
Me neither. Time has no meaning anymore. We all know that.
Okay, so I have a question for you. With 3 games left, Washington at 6-7, New York at 5-8, Philly at 4-9-1. How many more games do you think Washington needs to win to take the division?
It's a great question. I think they need at least 2, because I think the big problem that I'm seeing is that I don't think Philly with Jalen Hurts is nearly the walkover that they would have been if Carson Wentz were still in, which could lead to a situation where, as everybody predicted jokingly or obnoxiously or whatever weeks ago, where that last game against Philly is for the division. Especially given Philly's 1 tie. I think they're going to need a couple. Who did the Giants play?
The Giants, I think, have Baltimore and Cleveland before Dallas.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's in that order.
It's Cleveland and then Baltimore. And Cleveland, New York is the Sunday night game next week. So that's interesting.
Well, my hope is after the Giants finally laid a third yesterday and got beat pretty badly by Arizona, my hope is that we'll see more of that. And like they kind of only get like one more victory the rest of the way, which would mean Washington only has to get one more victory the rest of the way. Like, I still don't have, like, as much as good as I feel about the Washington football team, it's not like I'm confident that they're going to go 2-3 down the stretch.
No, certainly not.
And you know, Seattle, Carolina, Philly with Hurts. Like, I'm looking at that as one or two wins.
I think that whoever the Philadelphia version of us is sitting here looking at the Eagles having the Cardinals, Cowboys, and Washington, and I think they see a path to winning the division.
Yeah, well, of course, yeah. If I'm an Eagles fan, I'm like, win out, and I bet we get in. At 7, what is it? 6-8-1.
It would be 7-8-1. It would be 7-8-1. And yeah, so if that's they right, win, right. And so I don't think they're wrong, because just doing quick math, so they'd be 7-8-1, but one of those wins would come over Washington. So the best Washington could be is 8-8. So okay, right. So Washington still could lose the game against Philly. If they win the other two, they could lose the game against Philly and still get in theoretically.
Here's what I think. I think Washington is going to win one of their next two and go into Philly at 7-8. And I think the Giants are going to win one of their remaining games, and they're going to finish at 6-10. That's kind of how I feel about New York. So I really hope in this scenario I just laid out, which I think is sort of likely. I think I like Washington going 1-1 and the Giants going 1-2. I think that's kind of like in the most likely, you know, outcomes. I really hope that Philly loses against Arizona or Dallas to make week 17 meaningless.
Yeah. It's, you know, it would be easy to say to pretend like you prefer a meaningful game, you know, because it would be more exciting and whatever.
Right.
But no, I totally agree with you. I would love to be resting the starters at, you know, 7-8 or whatever.
Them beating New Orleans is like a real wrinkle in this, because I kind of had that as like a definite L, and they'd be out completely. But they're still very much in. Like, if they beat Arizona, all they got to do is beat Dallas to set up what might be a de facto NFC championship in Week 17.
Yep. Still plenty to be tense about. Now, if you wanted to be optimistic and hopeful and turn it around the other way, if Washington somehow beats Seattle next week, I'm going to worry a lot less about everything. Because if they can contain Russell Westbrook, good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the Brody. Sure.
Yeah, if they can contain Russell Wilson, I believe they could contain Jalen Hurts, who may be great someday, but at this point is not, you know, is bargain basement Russell Wilson. I think, but man, it's down to actually a pretty exciting NFC East race here, which is bizarre.
Yeah. I'm concerned about Washington's ability to score 20 points. Without Alex Smith, so if it's Dwayne Haskins, I'm definitely concerned about their ability to score 20 points. And with Alex Smith, I'm still concerned, even though a little less so. And I'm like more confident in like certain game situations, you know, that like he's not gonna throw the absolutely crucial pick at the worst possible time. But like, to beat Seattle, I feel like they've got to be able to score. Like, Seattle averages about 30 points a game. I think they're right on 30 points a game for the season. So even if our defense is great, you know, you still can't really ask them to like hold them under 20.
Well, I mean, it's what the Giants did. The Giants held them to 12 a couple of weeks ago. And
right.
That's the tape that Washington's going to have to be watching. The Rams held them to 16. And that's it.
I mean,
those are the two.
It happens. Yeah, right. That's it. It happens. But like, over the course of 13 games, they averaged 30 points a game.
Yeah, no, they're very good.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough game.
Yeah. Well, I feel a lot better with Gibson and Smith. With Gibson and Smith, I actually feel like this team has a shot. Like a shot, not an expectation, but a shot against like any team in the NFC.
I don't even care about Gibson as much. Like, I would love to have him back. I think he's very good. This is no knock on him, but I think that he is replaceable. I'm not sure that Smith is replaceable by anybody on the roster. Now, he's clearly replaceable by God knows any number of other people. But nobody on the roster can come close. And that would be a very real concern.
All right. Any other thoughts on your first place 4-game win streak Washington football team?
Nothing. I mean, it's almost unthinkable. So it makes sense that I have no thoughts about it.
You like the all white unis back to back weeks?
I do. I think they're really nice. I don't put as much stock in how crisp they are as some other people seem to, but I like them. Okay. They're all right.
I had a strange thought yesterday, a strange experience. So yesterday I went surfing here in Wilmington, North Carolina in December. It was great. It was like a 70 degree day. It was kind of sunny. Waves were like good for my level of expertise. But what was notable about it is I actually like wore a wetsuit. I bought a wetsuit recently. I've never worn a wetsuit in my life for anything. I had trouble putting it on. I even had to ask some kid, like a 20-year-old kid, to like help me zip it up. It was embarrassing. But I wore a wetsuit and I was like super self-conscious, like walking around in public in a wetsuit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like skin tight as they are. But at least it was black, so that's forgiving. So this is on my mind when I was watching the game last night. I'm like, these dudes are wearing like the tightest possible, whitest possible clothing. Like, thank God they're professional athletes. But I got to think, like, maybe some of the offensive linemen maybe are at least a little self-conscious.
Maybe. That's a great question. That's actually something that somebody needs to do a story on. That would be fun to read. But yes, I have no idea. I would not be able to pull off head-to-toe white under any circumstances. So, right. Whatever.
Now, if I had a white wetsuit, that would be something special. that would be a real standout.
I wish I had a noise to convey the look on my face as you talk about all this surfing and wetsuits. Like, leaving aside the body consciousness and everything else, just surfing and wetsuits and everything. Like, it's, you know, sometimes I start talking about the nerd stuff, the Star Wars or comics or whatever, and you're like, you think I'm a total alien. That's how I feel right now. Like, I just literally, you could have said 8 million other things that I would have found much more normal and less surprising than I went surfing yesterday.
Well, I've evolved. I mean, like, first 30 years of my life living in D.C., that was a very foreign concept to me as well. But now, like, I live at the beach and there was like 100 other dudes in wetsuits surfing yesterday in December. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Yeah. And no, like, locals. Nobody that was like, you know, like trying to like beat me up for like being on their sandbar or whatever, like in the movie North Shore.
Or like the movie Point Break, where Anthony Kiedis shows up and or Point Break, to beat you up. That would be amazing.
Right. Like that doesn't happen too much. I don't know. Maybe it's because they could tell I was badass in my wetsuit, but
yeah, I mean, but once you're wearing that, you look incredibly tough.
Hey, weren't you the guy in the parking lot who couldn't zip up his wetsuit and had to ask a complete stranger to do it for him? Cool. Well,
If you can't look tough, looking completely helpless is probably the second best thing. You know, just present no threat and they run straight past you.
So we talked about football. We talked about surfing. By the way, Israeli Washington Wizards first round pick, Denny, made his preseason debut yesterday. I think he was 4 for 4 from three. I also saw several tweets along the lines of Denny is a dog. Like a real dog. So I feel like we might have something there. I'm very excited about this. Do we have Westbrook and Beal, but Denny and Rui went 3 for 4 from three as well. So I'm just,
I mean, it's Hanukkah.
Yeah.
It's Hanukkah. It's a time of miracles, Jamie.
What if he was only good during Hanukkah and like if he evaporated after that? I don't know.
That would be amazing. It's like the reverse Sandy Koufax. You know, not pitching on the holidays. Instead, he's only good during the holidays. That would be great.
Thinking of you, by the way, the other day, this is not Hanukkah related, when Disney spent like 4 hours announcing all of the new content.
Oh my God. It was crazy, right?
Like, how are you holding up during that?
I was okay. I actually didn't realize it was happening, and it is Hanukkah related because it was the first night of Hanukkah. So, like, you know, there's lots of, you know, frying things and preparing candles and focusing on the first night of the holiday and it being very exciting. And like every time I look down at my phone, there's like 6 new Star Wars movies coming out or whatever.
Yeah.
It was weird. But I actually was thinking of you during that because they announced 2 things that are direct spinoffs of Mandalorian. The Ahsoka show, which we correctly guessed was going to come a couple weeks ago.
I mean, I think you guessed, but yeah.
Whatever. you would have guessed if I hadn't. I just talk too much. And the something that they're calling, I think it's Rangers of the New Republic, or it's something dumb like that, which everybody's kind of assuming is going to be like, what's her name, the MMA lady and the guy from Justified or something like that. Are you interested in either of these things?
Oh, wait a minute. So I assume that the Rangers show was going to be Gina Serrano.
Yeah, that's
and Carl Weathers.
Oh God, that would be unwatchably bad.
Well, that's why I was like out on that because I don't really care about her character, which, by the way, has a memorable name, like Cara Dune. I think is the name.
Yes.
Like at least that's a good name.
It is a good name.
I didn't realize it might be Timothy Oliphant who's in that. I'm in because if I can spend more time with Timothy Oliphant as a marshal or a ranger or whatever the fuck, a man of the law, I'm in.
Yeah. That one worries me partially because of what we've said. It could go any number of ways. And if it's Gina Carano and Carl Weathers, I don't know that I would even watch it. I really don't.
No.
Yeah. Oh my God. That would be the only reason. Just having him yell it over and over again. The Ahsoka show, I'm intrigued by. I like Rosario Dawson. I like that character. I think she'd be better served actually having a full story around her rather than just showing up in someone else's story for, you know, 32 minutes or whatever. But for you, it's a significant step. I mean, it's a big step from like, hey, man, there's this one fun 30-minute show on each week. It's on for 8 episodes a year or whatever. And then suddenly they're dragging you into all this other crap. The next thing you know, you're like mapping out an extended universe.
Yeah. Well, so I think less is more. And I just for me and not like Disney shareholders, I would rather them just stick to The Mandalorian and it's 8 episodes a year or what have you. And that would be wonderful. Now, that said, it's alluring to me that there could be like 3 different shows that are happening at different times and not overlapping. And it's almost like you have Mandalorian, you know, whatever, 30 or 40 times a year or 30 times a year. Let's call it 30 times a year. So you're most of the time you're in within the season of like a Mandalorian universe program. That said, this is like the walking deadification of The Mandalorian. And I made that comparison before about how in I was on the first few seasons of Walking Dead. And then like, not only did that show not go anywhere, but they had like spinoff shows and different timelines and after shows. And very quickly I was out on The Walking Dead. So I'm concerned about that factor.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that also. I was definitely more excited about the other Star Wars announcements than the 2 Mandalorian spinoffs. They talked about a Lando show, which theoretically would have Donald Glover, which I would be totally in on. And
I love that they announced that without him necessarily being committed.
Yeah.
Like they're just feeling themselves. Like we're announcing like 100 things and if 10 of them don't happen, so what?
Yeah, that's fine. Or we can just, you know, they can just retool it and do a Billy Dee Williams show with old Lando. Billy Dee Williams has literally nothing to do with his life right now. There's an Obi-Wan show with Ewan McGregor. So those 2, just by virtue of having actual actors, I'm a little more excited about.
Yeah.
No offense to Carl Weathers, who is dreadful.
Yeah. Well, my concern about the Obi-Wan show and the Lando show is that they're both kind of like, not spinoffs necessarily. I don't know, whatever. They're kind of related or adjacent to the more recent trilogies. Of, you know, whatever the 3 trilogies around the year 2000 and the more recent over the last decade, not 3 trilogies, whatever, you know what I'm saying?
The last six
movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, overall, I feel like the reception to those films and the relationship to those films is not nearly as strong as the original trilogy for just like people more broadly. But for me personally, like I don't give a shit. 6 movies. Like I've only seen like 4 or 5 of them. I think I started this most recent, the 6th one. I don't even know what it's called. I couldn't even get through it. Like, I just don't care. And I get, well, I guess, although I care so little that I just am now realizing that Lando wasn't part of those.
Right? Yes.
Like Lando was part of the Solo movie.
Correct. Which was terrible. I mean, like, which I
did not watch. Yeah.
I genuinely hated it. I really thought that it was pretty much right up until Rise of Skywalker, it's one of the worst Star Wars movies. Let's stick with that, I think is fair. And I am still excited for the shows, because I think one thing that Mandalorian shows is that, like, people like a story. They don't need it to be a saga. It doesn't need to include, you know, epic whatever sweep and families and whatever. Like, I'm interested. I'm intrigued to see where it goes. I was even more interested in the Marvel announcements, which I know you don't care about at all.
Right.
But those were more interesting to me than anything in the Star Wars stuff.
Are there going to be Marvel streaming shows, or yes, are they only movies?
Yes, no, they're streaming shows, but they are going to feature the actors from the movies and the same sort of creative drivers from the movies. So theoretically, they will be, good for the value of good that is Marvel movies, which I enjoy tremendously. But I'm not going to get into the whole Martin Scorsese, you know, are they cinema debate.
I'm into the notion of Marvel shows. I think that was a big reason why Mandalorian worked for me so much. I could just spend like 35 minutes with it, not have to commit to the 2 to 3 hours that the Marvel movies command. And, you know, I could just get a taste. And then I can also kind of like spend that week until the next drop, like catching up a little bit, you know, maybe read a recap. You know, that's part of why The Mandalorian has worked so well for me. If The Mandalorian was just like a 2.5 hour movie, I don't even know if I would have watched it.
I don't think you would have. And it makes sense. I mean, you seem to me, just based on all of these conversations we've had on this, you like having something where you can do a little, I mean, research is a bit dramatic, but, you know, a little bit of extra reading and stuff. You like having it enter your life around the week. And that's almost always nerd properties. Very few people are like, let's analyze Grey's Anatomy or whatever. You know, it's not.
There isn't a recap economy around the Shonda Rhimes universe.
Exactly. I mean, there probably is, now that we say that out loud, and we're probably showing ourselves for not knowing that, but whatever. Yeah. Well, the first Marvel show debuts in January. So, you know, when Washington is making its playoff run and we're still podcasting, you will have to transition this back segment of the show to talking about one.
What is the first one?
It's WandaVision, which...
Oh, I've seen a trailer for that. I thought that was a movie.
It's a show. It's a streamer. And even more so than every time I ask this question during Mandalorian, I will be very interested to see if it holds any impact for you whatsoever if you come to it without having seen the movies. Like, my daughter is fired up for it because she likes that character in the movies, and she's intrigued to see where this goes. I'm fired up for it because I'm... you know, me, but
I've never heard of that character outside of the context of a show called WandaVision.
I don't know any reason you would have. She was the Scarlet Witch in the comics, but she really never crossed over to other media until the movies. We don't need to go. But once the show debuts, we can go more in that direction.
So I have a podcast rec for you. I'd be surprised if you aren't listening to it already. Okay. In part because it's part of the Ringer Podcast Network. And I feel like we both consume a lot of Ringer podcast content.
Yeah, although less so recently. But anyway, go ahead.
But the other part is that it has to do with music from the 90s. The podcast is called 60 Songs That Explain the 90s. Are you familiar with this?
I'm familiar with it, but haven't listened yet. Is it good? Is it worth listening to?
Okay, so I've listened. So right now there are 6, 7, 8 episodes. Each episode is about a specific song. And it's kind of like an audio doc about that song. And it's Rob Harvilla from The Ringer. And he usually almost has like a spoken word sort of like essay about the song mixed in with like different, you know, audio cuts. And they'll bring on a guest or maybe two guests to like get, you know, their point of view. The ones I've listened to have been phenomenal. I've absolutely like just bathed in it. One of them was November Rain by Guns N' Roses.
Oh, I mean,
and it's just like 45 minutes about Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 and what it was like when those albums came out and the November Rain video and all the like intricacies of that, you know, it was almost like a, you know, they had like a movie, like a feature film budget for a music video. So that was like the first one I listened to, and I thought it was amazing. Wu-Tang's Cream was another episode, just fantastic. Nice. And the most recent one I listened to is Smashing Pumpkins' Mayonnaise, which I thought was kind of an interesting pick because Mayonnaise is not like the biggest Smashing Pumpkins song, but it might have been the best Smashing Pumpkins song on their biggest record. So, you know, it's kind of a good mix. The ones I'm looking at the track list right now, the ones I have not listened to, I think my next one up is Gin Blossoms' Hey Jealousy, in part because that was like a perfect rock pop song. And also, I don't really know anything about the Gin Blossoms.
Like, oh, it's a depressing story. You're in for a depressing story.
Yeah, there's one for Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know. I haven't listened to that one. I feel like I'm good on Alanis, but whatever. Missy Elliott, The Rain, Super Duper Fly. Ghetto Boys, Mind Playing Tricks on Me. Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. Those are the ones so far. And I feel like this podcast was made for me. I love music documentary content, and I love, like, I mean, the 90s was our high school and college years, so of course I love music from the 90s. It's high recommendation.
Yeah, I will definitely check it out. If I'd known there was a podcast episode, a professionally produced podcast episode out there about mayonnaise, I would have downloaded it immediately. That was, you're not wrong calling that the best song off their best album. But the other thing is, it doesn't surprise me that he picked it, because it was also, like, I was on, God help me, Smashing Pumpkins, like, Usenet message boards and stuff back in the day. And it was always the biggest fan favorite also. So, like, anybody, you know, with the quasi-spin magazine, actually legitimate spin magazine cred, and all that implies that Harvilla has, it does not surprise me that's what he would pick.
Well, it surprises me in part. It kind of delights me. It's not really a surprise because, like, it was 1993 or whatever when that song came out. So the entirety of my knowledge of it is like just me and like three or four of my friends and what our opinions were, because it wasn't like it didn't have a music video or
it wasn't a single.
Wasn't a single. Yeah. So I know that for me and like three or four of my friends, that was like our favorite song. So it's like delightful that was the case writ large, you know, yeah. Like that was the song that everybody liked, even if it wasn't a single.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I'll do a podcast. I need to listen to that, and I will join you. I'll do a podcast recommendation also. I'll make it quick. Have you ever heard of or listened to a podcast called Dead Eyes?
Never heard of it.
Okay, so it's the comedian Connor Ratliff, who's a comedian and podcaster, and he's in the sort of Chris Gethard Show extended crew, which turns up on a lot of podcasts that I listen to, although I've never watched the Chris Gethard Show and don't even really know what it is. He was cast for a small role in Band of Brothers back in 2001, and Tom Hanks fired him at the last possible minute, allegedly telling a casting director that it was because Ratliff had, quote, dead eyes. And so Ratliff, he's the whole podcast is almost structured like Serial. Like, he brings in people, he talks to people, and it's not exactly a parody of Serial in that it doesn't, like, he's not making fun of the Serial style, but he's using the entire structure and format and tropes of that type of true crime show to sort of rehash what he freely admits is this like incredibly minor episode that had, you know, an outsized effect on him, but he's, you know, he's aware that it is meaningless. But something about it, it's just really well done. It's really, really effective and easy to listen to. And you want to, it has that Serial effect where you want to hear the next episode, even though it's not nearly as dramatic. That one or two people I've recommended it to have had the same reaction. So I know it's not just me. So that'll be my podcast recommendation for this week. Dead Eyes. Part of the
head. It's not just you, because as you talk through it, I remember seeing this on, like, I don't know, like New York Times best podcast of the year or something like that. There was like some sort of accolade for it in the year end lists. So Dead Eyes, I'm now following it. Let's see. One more thing. Friday was a big music album release day. There was Taylor Swift's Evermore, the follow-up to Folklore, which, by the way, I enjoy both of these.
Yeah.
Sturgill Simpson Cutting Grass Volume 2. So bluegrass versions of Sturgill's back catalog. Enjoy that deeply. The new Ryan Adams album, which I have not listened to, and I think it's the first major release of his since whatever allegations of wrongdoing, or maybe even worse than allegations of, you know, wrongdoing, have surfaced. But I've always liked his work. But so there's a new Ryan Adams album and a new Kid Cudi record. Kid Cudi, I'm not like a huge fan, but I've enjoyed a lot of his work. That's at least four full releases that came out on Friday to catch up with. Might have been more.
I only listened to the Taylor Swift one, which I enjoyed, although I do feel like both these two latest Taylor Swift albums are more for me and people like me. That is, people who want, like, you know, female-led sort of semi-quasi-acoustic heavy reverb background music. I can't imagine Taylor Swift's actual fans, especially the pop fans from like the 1989 days, are super fired up about it. And, you know, like my kids, for example, who loved 1989, could not possibly care less about these.
Yeah.
I have trouble with Ryan Adams post whatever the allegations were. I found them troubling, and I listened to enough Phoebe Bridgers music that I guess I wound up unknowingly sort of taking sides in the divorce, not real divorce, but you know what I mean.
Honestly, I wasn't yada yadaing that, by the way. Like, I just don't even know. I don't even know what the deal was. I just know he did some shit.
I'm not yada yadaing it either. I guess what I'm trying to sort of, the reason I'm sort of doing it in a dismissive way is because part of the reason that I feel like I know about it is because it involved somebody else that I listened to, which feels sort of cheap and bad. Like, if it were just a random person, who could possibly care?
Right. But there's some connection to it. Yeah.
Yeah. It resonated a bit more. And then the other two are in that wheelhouse of things that you listen to, that I see you tweet about, and plenty of other people tweet about, and that I don't have any connection to at all. But you know, I'll check out the new Sturgill Simpson? Sure, why not?
I mean, just skip all of it and go to the War on Drugs, Live Drugs.
I found out, I was listening to some old playlists, like old end of year playlists, and mine are not formal like yours. I know you do like a good fancy one. I just used to hit the favorite button on Spotify all year and then save all of those to one list and rename it. And one of those, I found I had a couple War on Drugs songs that I did not know
who sang
them. So I did... I was aware of them more than I thought I was the last time we talked about them, but I still haven't listened to the live album.
Well, go full druggy, please.
I will. Next week, I swear. This time for real. I really mean it.
All right. I feel like I spend too much of my time convincing other people to listen to More on Drugs. Anything else?
No, I got nothing, man. Dead eyes. Listen to it.
All right. Washington football. What are we at Seattle this week? Or is it Seattle at home?
Seattle's at home, I believe.
Seattle's not that it matters. They don't have to fly across the country. I guess that matters.
Yeah,
I think that matters. To get to 7-7, and I think if they get to 7 wins, especially if they get to 7 wins now, they're going to the playoffs. I don't know what the percentages look like. They just got up to like 70% range. They win next week, it's got to be up in the 80s. Yeah, so we'll have that to talk about next week. It's been fun.
Talk to you.
See you.